Stopped recording. Does I don't
know. We're still broadcasting. We're after show broadcasting.
We'll stop recording, but we can after show. We could welcome X to join us.
We didn't stop recording.
Oh, okay.
Oh, you stopped recording.
Yeah, I just saw it in the chat is all. I'm just
reporting. Tell me where the Joker is.
I'm reporting what I see. Yeah.
What did you do with Commissioner Gordon?
And thusly we commence with the after show, which means we will.
Why so serious?
Talk as long as we have energy or as long as people want to join us. We don't take us less seriously than we used to before, and we do Batman voices.
I want to know where Bernanke is and where he's got the printing presses.
Where are the printing presses? Oh my god.
Tell me where the printing presses are!
your throat, your voice is going to be like toast in a minute there. That's harsh.
Nah, I know how to do it. I've got practice. Yeah, you ain't feeling too good, is ya?
No, he said he had like a cough and a sore throat or something.
I hope he gets better soon.
Probably state.
He's got a bad case of statism.
Hey, that reminds me, you know that scene in The Dark Knight where the Joker goes to blow up the hospital and the detonator doesn't work at first?
I love that scene.
Okay.
That happened on accident. Did you know that?
Oh, did it really? Was that an actual detonator for
Yeah, they had a model building in the background, and Heath Ledger was hitting the actual detonator for the explosives, and he hit the button and the explosives didn't go off. So he just ad-libbed it and acted like, oh, this isn't working. He like hit it a couple more times and then the explosives went off and he wasn't expecting them to go off. And that's why when he jumped, that was like genuine. But that's why what made the scene so good, because he was actually like, oh, shit, you know, in real life.
Interesting.
You know? Yeah.
And it's worth mentioning, I guess if you're an insider and you know how to get to the Mumble server that TTK and others help provide, feel free to come join us. Also, our Skype. Is that working today, Turtle? Are we declined state?
It's up. It's right.
I just noticed that our resident statist is hanging out in the declined estate lobby. Is he trying to get in here?
Bring him in. Yeah, bring him in. I don't know if he's trying to get in, but let's bring him in.
Well, let's have him in here.
Yeah, let's
get him in. Hello, Bleeding Madras. You're on the declined estate show.
Postcast.
Wait, there we go. Yeah, he's unmuted now.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello and welcome. Do you want to talk about Batman? Do you have a good Batman voice?
Honestly, no, I don't. I'm not not the best of impressions.
Give us your Batman voice, and then we'll let you talk on the show a little bit.
I'm the hero that the city needs.
Yeah. You just sound like the guy who breathes heavy in the phone and then hangs up.
It's not a bad voice.
or the crab face guy. What's his name? Bane.
So what's
Listen.
Up?
Just hanging out.
We noticed you were in the lobby for the Declined Estate channel, so we thought you wanted to come in and talk to us.
I just kind of AFK'd there.
I did anyway.
Yeah. Well, what's up?
I don't know. You tell
us,
man.
We got another person too.
You're a guest on the Declined Estate Internet podcast. What do you have anything to say?
No, I mean, I really like your podcast. Listen to a couple of them, and yeah, I think you do a really good job. Really good interviews, well thought out.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Yeah, we're trying to up the quality constantly, and we learn a lot along the way. Do you remember which ones you heard recently? I have a research foundation. Some people I talked to on the phone today, and they wanted to know if I get them on, if to show the director a couple casts. Which ones those should be, and I'm like, how do we put our best foot forward without betraying too much, you know, liberty jerkness, but also a good style, you know, professionalism. I'm trying to get ideas for what I should share with people if I want to get more outside the community guests on.
Well, my favorite one was David Freeman.
Yeah. Oh, so we've published that? That's news to me. I'm glad to hear it. I know we're backlogged, and that's our main complaint. Oh, you probably listened to that one live.
I'll listen to that one live, yeah.
Oh, God bless you, sir. Yeah, he was, I mean, you heard me talk about it a couple times today. Like, I was just blown away by that guy's brain.
We haven't published that one yet. Let me see if there's a few to publish here, actually.
Because I was talking to the, I mean, if you guys want to get a little sneak peek on what's coming, Wrong's got a guest coming, and then I was talking to a very bright-eyed, or at least she sounded like it, girl at the Johnson O'Connor Research Foundation. This is a place that, that tests people, and they give them their like human stats, so you're like a World of Warcraft character, or you're like a Pokemon character. And she
I
was like
that up. It was really, I thought it was really cool. I wish they had more testing locations, because I was actually tempted to save up the money to do that, because it seems like something that could really help you decide what's a good thing for you to pursue if you're not already in the right place.
Yeah, I'm humbled. So I'm humbled that you checked it out, but it's I mean, I know it's a good chunk of change, but I can't get behind it enough. And the woman I spoke with today on the phone, I called her and I thought maybe they forgot about me, or maybe I said decline to state and they heard us Liberty Jerkin or listened to a few episodes and were like, these guys are weird. But she was super excited to get the call. She said, oh, you're the guy. This is your name. You go by Ron though on the thing, right? There's also this other guy, Ron. And she was just like, They had all my stats in front of me, so it was kind of awkward, because it was like they know too much or whatever. Like, I know that you have a lot of ideas going through your head, and I'm like, okay. And they're like, well, we can talk about that in the air, but I don't know if we, you know, we don't have to reveal all the bad things. I'm like, oh, I'm just like cringing the whole time. I'm like, yeah, you can tell them that I'm almost tone deaf.
Hold on, were you serious that they actually like tell you like if you were Pokemon, which you would be? Was that a joke?
That is my analogy. Thanks for asking, Toast. It's they give you like, you know, you create like, I don't know if you played, you know, basketball games for a console, or you have a character that you level up different stats.
Sure.
Or whatever.
I've played everything.
Yeah, of course. Right, we have a lot of gamers in this community.
He's played all the things.
All the things. And what they do is they go in and test you, and they do games. It's not like paper and pencil, like, you know, gate testing or stuff like that. It's pretty much they have you in there playing these games. It's kind of low tech. I think it was put together a while ago. But you're like literally playing with blocks. You're like putting pins in things. You have, it's like some of the stuff feels like you're doing like the back of a cereal box games. And at the end of like a day and a half, they're like, okay, well, here's your Pokemon stats. And they just give you like a little a one page thing and all the things they figured out how to test. And they have little bars that go across, like totally like video game stats. And they're like, oh, here's your spatial visualization ability. And your
charisma's the dump stat.
They should have a dump. I mean, that's why I'm so excited to talk to them on air, because we'll get your guys, you know, your input and be able to say what they need to add. But it's you get it, and it's a mind fuck, because you're like, oh, I thought I was good at that, or what is that, or, you know, I mean, you go through a process of like, you know, understanding or grieving if you didn't score as high as you didn't, you know, you wanted to in some. That might be a strong word, but it's pretty cool stuff, and I was, you know, very pleased today that she was so excited to hear stuff. But that's sorry, Bleeding Moderates, that's a total tangent from Dr. David Friedman, but that's going forward.
So is that all you had to say, Madras?
Oh, well, I mean, I really, other than liking the show, I mean, I don't really know anything else I could add. I mean, I still do work with the state, but I'm not intellectually bound to it anyway. And, you know, your interviews and your podcast was a part of that. So
really,
so yeah, you cool. Made, that's good
you,
to hear.
You made a little bit of a transition while I mean, Decline to State was part of your arc. Do tell.
Well, a little bit. I mean, I work as a politician in Canada. So going from that, and you know, I work for a centrist party. It's not really. They're more what most people would say fiscally conservative, socially liberal.
Sure.
So I really agreed with that. But as I studied economics more, and actually that's going to be part of my major, I just kind of saw the flaws with states and the barriers that it puts up, and how more efficient, efficient it could work without a state, and the limitations that it puts on trade and on freedom.
Yeah,
so
yeah, that's cool.
So
that's,
yeah, kind of, you guys. You guys kind of posed some good questions to me, and I remember talking to Eternal before, actually, outside of this, and really got thinking about the whole idea of anarcho-capitalism or voluntarism.
That's cool. I think people can make a really big difference from inside the machine. Like, you hear people, I guess the famous one, like, Molyneux goes out and says that you can't, like, he makes this grand sweeping statement that you can't turn the mafia into something good. And admittedly, that's true, but I think people within the system can make a huge impact towards individuals. And I think that's important.
Well, you could unplug people from the Matrix, as it were. I mean, they have to go back, right?
Yeah, but I also think even if it's like, you know, a publicly elected politician, and I don't think Madras is. He just said he works.
I'm a director in my area. No, I'm not. I'm appointed, not elected.
Right, okay. I mean, still, I think like there's just a tremendous capacity for staff or even politicians to do significantly less damage than bad ones would. And I'm perfectly fine with that, too.
Yeah, I mean, one big thing here in Canada was a long gun registry. And my party as a whole was for it. So what it was is if you bought a shotgun or any sort of rifle, you'd have to register it with the government, and they keep all that information on you. And at one point, they published where you lived or the general area where you lived. And I argued against this quite a bit before it became party policy. It's a ridiculous idea, and actually now it's abolished because of another party. But I did, you know, I did change some minds on it. And if more people in politics were willing to do that and willing to actually stand up for what they believe and give more power, take power away from themselves and give it to the other people, I think things would work a lot better. It's not entirely possible, but I think every person counts.
Right. I mean, in general, I think there are just too many people that don't think as you do to really make a giant sweeping impact. So to that extent, yeah, Molyneux's right. But I think incrementalism is cool.
It's better than nothing. Well, you also change the way people take approaches to future problems, and especially, most importantly, as Molyneux also says, deal with their interpersonal problems. And that's where you really make the biggest impact on their lives, is getting them to think about things in the light of, you know, voluntary versus non-voluntary, or just in general. I don't know, it's like the what would Jesus do of libertarianism or something, but just making people think about things in a different way.
As strange as it is, I come into contact with a fair number of bureaucrats every day. Indeed, I am one. But, I don't know, I have a lot more success preaching liberty to those people than to the general public, as strange as that sounds.
Tell us more about that. That sounds interesting to me.
I mean, I don't want to like betray my location or career to a really great extent, but I mean, I teach kids for a living.
Yeah,
he teaches them how to murder
educate
people
as best as I can. At worst, it is still schooling.
Can you give us an anecdote?
He teaches them to burn things.
While Toast is thinking if and how he wants to respond, I can't remember talking with Toast and Eternal, but off air, I think, about what's kind of required working within the status paradigm and working in some of these jobs. And I'm not in the school system. I'm in an FDA regulated FDA Foxtrot Delta Alpha regulated industry, and you kind of have to. To be able to be yourself, be human, you have to be able to adapt and, talk your way through things and kind of conform to norms that you don't really buy into. And, that's one thing that's a skill that Toast mentioned that you have to kind of have in the field he's working in that I thought that was kind of interesting. So I took that and thought about it for a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I can't really give any specific anecdotes without I don't know. I just don't know the extent to which I would be comfortable talking about it, so I think I'll just stay safe. But in general, if you are a bureaucrat and you're a person whose money does come inevitably from taxation, I think that I've done some good in sort of like helping out people, other teachers around me, sort of move away from this very political-centric idea of just like bring in tons and tons of funding. Just don't take the whole structure all that seriously. Don't care all that much about like certification, all that. Just like do the best job you can teaching the damn kids, and don't worry about all this political nonsense.
Well, if anything, you're lessening the pressures from the grassroots to obtain more money, and that's the real danger right there. Yeah, it doesn't really matter what. What people do, because they're not the people obtaining the money, but they can put pressure on people to not necessarily take more money, and ultimately, because we don't have a choice to opt out. out. That's gonna be the most important thing, is to just take less money from people.
But even at like a personal level, I try as hard as I can to stress that people use significantly less coercive methods of classroom management. Very bad behaviorist classroom management systems out there that are extremely popular because, they work to the extent that teachers don't have behavior issues in the class. I think it has extremely destructive effects on the children. And, you just want it to be as not bad as possible. I mean, they're trapped in the class, and you have to do your best as a teacher to make up for that, because one person can't change that whole process. It's not happening anytime soon, but you can make a difference to individuals by making it so they're much less confined. You know, there are classrooms where children can't stand up. They're not free to stand up without raising their hand and asking first, and that's just criminal. But there are good management systems that are going to allow freedom of movement, expression, to a greater extent than others. I try to stress those.
I remember listening to this YouTube video, and it was talking about how the current school structure was brought up during the Enlightenment, and how it's trying to train people to work in factories and to work in like that Industrial Revolution period.
Yeah, that's pretty much correct. I mean, that's not hidden history. That's what they teach you while you're in certification classes. Yeah,
Toast, do you mind if I elaborate on that a little bit?
Go for it.
So the schooling system started in Prussia as a way, originally, for people, the nobility, to have more effective soldiers that would not flee the battlefield and would actually fire their weapons and stuff. I think Molyneux talked about this in a couple casts where, soldiers on the battlefield back in those days would only 10% would actually fire their weapons or something. It was, everyone was just shell-shocked and, wouldn't obey orders, and it was really hard to get your army to do anything. So they wanted to develop a schooling system to get, children to grow up more obedient and more willing to accept authority and all that stuff. So when they get called out to fight for the glory of the country and for the king, that they'll willingly go and do it without questioning. Hey, why the hell am I here? I don't really want to be fighting this war. I don't want to kill anybody. So that's where it really came from. And then what happened is this idea got co-opted by the industrial leaders and the political and theorists at the time. There's a guy, Horace Mann, I think that's the guy. Is that right?
Yep.
Who's considered like the father of the modern school system. Yeah,
Horace Mann is the one that came up with the idea of using schools as a way to promote Republican value, quote, lowercase r, Republican values and nationalism in general.
So what basically they did is they co-opted it for improving, partially one, to make obedient workers for factories, and then two, to promote nationalism and generally just strengthen the political structure.
Right. I mean, keep in mind, even before then, schools were often sort of indoctrination instruments for Puritans. So, I mean, it was the format of classrooms, the what they call, I guess, graveyard row seats, where they just line up, very little interaction. And that was proven pretty effective in the Puritan age.
So, in general, the whole structure emanates from religious indoctrination and emanates from military training. So it should be no surprise as to the way it works right now. It's just that's what the system came from. That's what it was designed to do. And we're trying to take a system that simply cannot do what people want it to do. And when I say we, I'm talking about a lot of the libertarians who aren't against public education, progressives who think they can go in and make things better, anybody or even conservatives who go in and think that simply just school choice itself is enough. People that go in and try to take a system that fundamentally was not designed to produce people that would be good critical thinkers, independent minds, open to standing up to authority and that kind of stuff. Generally, what we consider the very individualist mindset, the system that was put in place doesn't promote that. So you have to toss the whole thing out because it's trying to, it's like trying to make a balloon dog out of rocks or something.
I don't follow your metaphor.
I don't know what that metaphor was.
I'm not Molyneux. I can't do it, man. I can't just metaphor every 20 seconds.
Didn't Dr. Thomas Woods said that Peter Schiff was the king of analogy or something like that? That's who he puts on. And he always says that he's really bad at them and he can only come up with one every 20 years or something. But I don't know if he would use that one.
Exlogica is a good question. Sorry, I totally missed what you said there when I was reading it.
Especially I know, it's okay. Just filler. Go for it.
Okay, yeah. So here's a good question. I'll repeat it for anyone who doesn't see it. Don't you guys think, though, that there is an inherent contradiction in the view that states cannot centrally plan, and yet most state programs are elaborate attempts to dumb down citizens? I guess he's saying, these education system was a quote-unquote successful attempt to make students more submittable to authority and all this stuff, and yet states aren't supposed to be able to produce anything because of central planning. Well, I think there's a flaw in that because...
I very much like the point, though. I think that really adds to the discussion, but yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a... what's the word I'm thinking of? There's a comparison between apples and oranges going on there, which is that we're talking about something removed from market forces completely. As in there's no prices involved on this. There's no we don't think about it as producing something for a cost. We talk about the state imposing this system of education to dumb down citizens. I don't think it's kind of removed from market forces. So what you really want to do is compare it to if the market wanted to sit down and try to dumb down citizens, could it do it much more efficiently? And I think that's certainly true.
I mean, I don't buy at all, kind of the conspiracy angle on education. Like, I wouldn't have gone as far as calling Horace Mann, a really significant figure. But the people that do tend to say that people like Andrew Carnegie funneled a huge amount of money.
Yes,
into specifically changing formats of schools around 1900. I don't know a lot about that history, and I haven't done enough research to really lend that claim any credibility. But that's sort of the argument you hear. I don't know much about it.
I guess, I definitely think that I'm making the huge leap, which is accepting that states intentionally are trying to dumb down citizens through education programs. I think that's not necessarily, it doesn't have to be true for them to be bad systems for educating people. So that,
and actually,
for them to be kind of inhumane systems for educating kids.
I do kind of disagree with your counter argument Eternal that was supposed to counter Exlogica's.
I don't like my argument either.
Okay. I mean, I was just going to say that it's not so much whether the market forces are in place to create schools that dumb down kids. It's more that, are people capable of it? And, I mean, it's true. If there are people that are inherently so competent that they can dumb down generations of kids, people probably could centrally plan. I don't know. I think he's right.
I think centrally planning is possible in the sense that you could come up with a system that as long as it doesn't have to worry about the costs to implement it, as long as you're free from the pricing mechanism, that it can work. I mean,
so we can take sort of a smaller example of whether Mayor Bloomberg in New York can actually keep all of the baby formula out of hospitals, because he was going to try to do that for a while. And I think he could put a lot of effort into doing that, and that you're right, there would just be associated costs. So if we can centrally plan and focus on one specific little thing, I just dropped a huge royal we, but you get what I'm saying. If government focuses on something, I bet you they can do it. I mean, they're pretty good at military stuff from what I hear. Except funding it, they just kind of throw extra money at it.
They're good at jailing lots of pot users too.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh yeah, they're good at doing lots of things, like trampling on right. They're great at that. But Exlogica, I just want to respond to what you said there. Hayek's argument is more a description of reality than anyone human and their competence. Yeah, so Hayek's argument is not the same as Mises' argument. This is an important distinction to make. And I learned this not very long ago because I'm that dumb and it takes me that long to learn these things. So I'll share it with you guys. So because it's important to understand that Hayek was talking about the knowledge problem, whereas Mises is talking about the price information problem. It's a different thing. And I think Hayek is largely regarded as wrong nowadays, which is to say that okay, it's kind of a little hard to understand, but I think it's like if there's central planning for producing, say, pencils, there's central planning for producing pencils, there's not really a knowledge problem in so far as everybody knows how to produce what they're going to produce. They just don't know how much of it and where to get the materials and whether they should produce, you know, a surplus now or they're producing too much now. There's no feedback for how much and whether to start substituting goods and stuff because there's a price system, as opposed to the knowledge problem, which is you're trying to build a pencil and trying to centrally plan it. Nobody can sit down and actually figure out how to build a pencil. Well, the truth is actually you can. You can sit down and really try to figure out how to put together a pencil. It's just really hard and it takes a lot of money and a lot of people, but you can do it like from start to finish. Like you could figure out where to mine the steel and all that stuff. You've seen that video, you know, iPencil. You know, you have to get the rubber from the rubber tree.
It's the oldest economic metaphor in the book.
And the wood. And yeah, you can do it. I mean, and you can do it with any system. And the government does that all the time. And they do it with a lot of like defense systems. I mean, that's how we produce really complicated, impressive defense systems. We have like F-16 fighter jets. And I don't even know what the new ones, like the F-32 Raptor. Is that what it is? We produce billion dollar plus aircraft carriers. I mean, just gigantic weapons of war, and they're really powerful and they're good and they do what they do better than anybody else or anybody else's stuff. The thing is, it's just removing cost. There's no price mechanism to tell us whether we should be doing it that way, whether we should be using certain substitute goods. And so when it comes to education, it's the same way, which is, yeah, we can centrally plan something, but we don't even know if it's economically efficient, and it's probably destructive in terms. So
any teacher will tell you that a teacher can't educate properly in that environment. Like, the deal is you're given 30 kids in your classroom. There's this new thing they call like inclusion classrooms, which is they, you know, some people up on high deemed that it was wise to put special ed kids in the same classrooms as regular ed and gifted ed kids. And so somehow magically the teacher is supposed to differentiate instruction properly for the regular ed kids, but also the gifted kids and also, you know, your LD students, learning disabled students, and sometimes even autistic kids, ones with disruptive disabilities like Tourette's, they're all in the same classroom now. And I mean, just start, like, good luck doing that. That's just, no one can really do that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you can centrally plan incorrectly, too, of course. But what I'm saying is, more so, you could centrally plan a system. Getting back to the original point, you could centrally engineer a system. You could design a system. You have the knowledge to be able to figure out how a system works and build it from the ground up that will make it very hard to teach kids properly. It'll make it very easy to instill ideas of authoritarianism and obedience, these kinds of things. It's not that hard to sit down and come up with a system that's going to do that. Maybe because I'm an engineer, it's easy for me to think in that manner. But the idea of architecting an entire system from the ground up and actually having it work is feasible. It's something we do all the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, the problem is whether that system is actually going to do what you want in a productive manner, whether it's going to be a productive use of resources. So in the case of the education system, it's very well possible that their goal with doing this is to produce people that make, you know, better factory workers. Well, guess what? We don't really have any factories anymore, so that's kind of backfired. And of course, the education system is removed from the price structure. It's not a market system. So even if the captains of industry 100 years ago had brilliantly engineered this system, they've made it completely immune to the price system. So now that, you know, the new captains of industry that are out there are looking not for those same kinds of workers anymore, and there's a shortage and everything that usually happens when you centrally plan things and there's no pricing system so you can change up how you produce things. So in all, our education system is economically destructive, even though it might have actually been beneficial back in 1850. I don't know.
I mean, I don't know if it's... I know for a fact, really, that it isn't currently intended to sort of steer children towards being good at factory jobs. I don't think there's any intent left in anybody except moving children towards some random conception of what an educated person is, which is actually one of the problems. I could go into a separate rant about that.
Yeah.
It's more likely, though, that I think it's a lot more likely that schools were just intended to be extremely nationalistic and to breed nationalistic kids.
Because
the that's strong sort of dominant force going on is that group dynamic, where if you don't stand for the pledge, people look at you funny.
I think instead of saying they would make good factory workers, they would just make good obedient workers.
Yeah, well, I mean, good being the subjective evaluation of whoever's running that factory, whatever they wanted at the time. Now, clearly, you know, the guys like Carnegie Mellon would not have funded these kinds of changes if they didn't want them. Otherwise, it makes no sense. So they
did you say Carnegie Mellon? Because that's university.
Oh God, I meant Carnegie
and
himself.
Andrew Carnegie.
I'm tired.
Proselytize.
I'm drinking scotch. So proselytize. Did I do that right? Is that right? Proselytize. I can't say it now.
Yep,
I got it right once. Prozac.
Count it.
So
yeah, and X-Logic is right. People want. I mean, I don't know if kids. I know that a lot of kids don't want to be schooled. But you talk to their parents, and I mean, like, if schools were to blink out of existence, parents are just going to go and set up schools with rows of seats.
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, you have to, people's values are going to have to shift.
Oh, yeah, and hey, but to even further my point, well, mine first, even, I mean, there's an even higher demand for schooling than what's public right now, because so many kids go off to karate practice, which is babysitting, and they go off to daycare, which is babysitting. So they go from babysitter one, that is school. It's what the kids do while parents are at work. They go off to school two, daycare, because their parents are at work.
Hey, now, karate is like child abuse or something, because Stefan Molyneux or something like that.
Oh, right. He deserves two more of my dollars.
You guys were all abused as children.
Obviously.
It's true.
I did use your $2 joke on the Reddit tubes, so somebody,
oh, good.
Somebody definitely pulled and quoted that part and responded to it in lines of...
it's not mine. Effect. I don't believe in property of ideas. No worries.
It's so funny, though. It's so funny.
It started some thread about people going back. Like, I don't, you know, don't always follow all the threads, but it went like six back and forth, and people were like, well, it costs more than $2 to bill the credit card company. I'm like, oh my God. Troll-o-lo.
Yeah, and it's possible that he has to like include every donation in his taxes or something. I understand that. I mean, but that's the point. It's supposed to tell him something.
Troll-o-lo.
It's also that, I don't know, that feeling of just inevitability that motivates the internet. Like, you don't go off and go get mad at somebody for donating $2 if you don't want tons of $2 donations. Like, he was
the
just
internet
asking
knows
for
it's
it.
Irony. Yeah, it's an irony machine. Barbara Streisand effect, man, on everything.
Or the Beyonce in the snapshot for the Super Bowl.
I still have that picture up because it's so funny.
I had to close horrific. It because I was laughing too hard at the beginning of the cast.
Oh my gosh.
Should open it again. Control Shift T, man. Opens up your recent tabs.
Oh, we'll get God. That. You're tripling my productivity.
Did you not know that?
I always do Control T to open a new one, but no, I don't
Control
use Control Shift
T. Control Shift T opens up your recently closed tabs, and you can just whack it as much as you want as long as you got history. It will not work for your incognito tabs, though, so you're safe.
We'll call those the status tabs then. And by the way, toast.
Now, if you barge into somebody's room and they've recently, or you see them clicking windows shut, you just go over, open up a browser, and Control Shift T. I looked something on the internet, Control Shift T.
I apparently upvoted you.
Oh, nice.
So apparently I was aware. Short term Reddit memory loss.
Oh, boy. But yeah, getting back to the original point I was trying to make is that, you don't need to have people willingly enforcing the system knowing what its intended goal is. You just have to have the system be put in place, and it kind of sustains itself because people justify what exists, because they justify, you know, their sources of livelihood and all that, because it's immune to competition. People only really change their values when they see that their values have a cost associated with them. And this is the problem with all statism, which is that most people probably will never switch their values until they have an alternative to, like, almost shove down their throat. and then everybody will probably flock to the alternative when it exists. But until then, it's this weird network effect problem where everyone justifies what already exists because people are using it.
Well, everyone needs that feeling of I turned out okay. No, it's really strong. I mean, I turned out okay, so that means everything in my past must have been okay.
It's also the idea of familiarity, which is I understand how this works, and I feel comfortable with it, and doing something new and different is scary. That's true in just the market in general. Often people don't like to switch brands for whatever reason. The stories of, I think, was this your, like, grandmother Toast or something that always had the same radio station in her car or something the entire life? I don't know. I've heard the story from someone told me this. I might have been a teacher or friend or something like that. But just like, yeah, some woman, who got a car and it had, the radio set the same station the entire time she had the car. She didn't know she could change it. Just completely content with the idea that, oh, well, that's how the radio works. It just plays one station.
The Obama phone only calls one number.
1-800.
iPhone shuffle. Calls random people.
I love that idea. You should sell those as gag gifts.
Oh, I should.
I should do the afterthought. You should get exclusive. No,
my thought process there was like, oh, because it's from a meme or something I saw on 4chan a long time ago. Then I was like, oh man, that means I wasn't first. Oh, but wait, I don't believe in IP. Yeah, I marketed it.
I'm free.
Oh yeah, I have something to add to the whole whether it can be organized thing in regards to schools. It's really easy to use group dynamics. Like I have like a textbook over here called Behavior Management.
All right.
It's really nice sounding, isn't it? Behavior Management. but that's what you need to go through to get certified. And there's a chapter in there on like behavioral techniques, behaviorism. You should give Wikipedia, you should ask Wikipedia what behaviorism is if you don't know what it is, because it's a system of external reinforcement for the most part, that when people receive external reinforcements, they're going to be more likely to behave in the way such to receive that external reinforcement, like a Jolly Rancher or candy, whatever.
Like Skinner box kind of stuff.
Yeah, Skinner box. That's B.F. Skinner was one of the originators of behaviorism. And so all you have to do in a classroom, put kids in groups and tell each group that the group that has the fewest behavior problems throughout the day gets candy at the end or something. And you make it that each group has to, work together to have the fewest behavior problems. So if you're an individual in one of these groups, you have tons of peer pressure from the outside to be the normal perfect student all the time. You're not going to go around experimenting with like little, what they call misbehaviors or whatever. And you're sort of socially constrained by that. And that's a group dynamic. You don't want to be a weird person. You don't want to have original ideas because you know what? You could be discovering misbehaviors. So you're going to shut up, sit down, do your work. Because the people around you are going to hate you if you misbehave. And that's a widely used behavior management system in classrooms.
Works pretty well until you get that one kid who's a completely problem.
Before I attach the word works to goals. Most teachers' goals are to have the perfect classroom where kids just do exactly what they're told all the time.
Well, that's how they
get not my goal.
Praise. That's how they get praises from administration, get raises eventually, get promoted into administration more easily.
That's how you have the fewest legal issues too. Yeah.
Yeah, that too. And also like the fewest parents that come and rag on them.
For sure.
Because kids always go home and they talk about the class to their parents. Well, if the teacher's letting them do stuff that the parents don't feel comfortable with, then you're going to get parents coming in and making complaints to the principal. And you have to fight that battle, too. And that's 30 different battles you're potentially going to have to fight. And God forbid, I think parents are the worst statists of all, even worse than the administration.
Well, I mean, remember, the statists, the people that would reconstruct it if it were to disappear.
Interesting.
That's the best definition you can possibly put together.
That is a pithy statement. Thank you for that. I'm gonna repeat that aloud just because it sounds cool.
We need more cute definitions of the state.
Yeah, right.
that great.
We need the state. The statists Are the people who would reconstruct it or reconstruct the state if it were to disappear?
Yeah. So it's a circular definition, but it sort of gets the idea across that it's the people who support it.
We the people.
That's not great fiction by which everybody tries to live at the expense of everybody else. Bastiat.
I love Bastiat, man.
It's good. The pithy statement that Dr. David Friedman had, or the aphorism, or whatever you want to call it, was that when you're younger, you're trying to prevent everybody from copying your ideas, and when you get older, you're worried if people aren't copying your ideas. And I'm not getting it verbatim, but
that's cute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder if he learned that the hard way or through practice, or he learned that from somebody else or his dad or something. But it's good.
Wonder what my values are going to be like when I'm old. It's weird to think about.
Damn kids and their music.
Yeah, I'm already like that.
Oh, God. Yeah, I think you're already old, dude.
These kids cramps? And their rap music and their booties. Get off my lawn.
You know, join me in the old club toast?
Yeah.
We can sit around and talk about the good old days, drink scotch, good times.
Sounds like your evening, Eternal. Sit around, talk about things, and drink scotch.
That is actually what I'm doing.
Well, for
you're doing what you love.
For a day that we...
I'm already old.
We weren't even sure we were going to get a first off cast. We've almost hit the 2-hour mark in terms of, you know, doing a full after show. So this is not bad.
I was going to mention, like, this after show has been, like, more full of it's been really chock full of content more than...
Oh, I think we got to post this one.
I think we should. And Toast is recording.
I mean, I've been recording it, yeah.
Oh, it's being recorded. It's still broadcast. I mean, it'll be on the server, so we're good.
Do we want to, for this one, do we want to take the idea that maybe Proper Isle, maybe somebody else suggested of just throwing stuff off unedited to get it up? I know we're still working on getting a process hammered down. Maybe
well,
this is,
I remember Reto said something about you can't just do that because...
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, when you take it down and you need to get it into an MP3, well, you have to... Like, the biggest thing he was talking about is we record an OGG floating point audio. Well, OGG removes silence. It doesn't record it. So what happens is... When you decode that into like a dot wave, your just raw audio, it's gonna be huge because of all the silence that it usually records at the beginning and the end of the cast and all that stuff. Well, fortunately, I think this one won't be too bad. But sometimes, like, you power on the studio and it just starts recording, and there's like 4 hours of silence or something. So it's an enormous amount of data that he's got to go through to decode, and then you have to take all that and cut out all the silence, find the beginning and end, make sure you cut it up correctly, and put in the intro and outro music, and then...
What about the magnets?
Yeah, then you have to take a magnet to it. So, yeah, for all our listeners, you really should care what I'm saying right now. It's a more arduous process than it should be, just because there has to be a human sitting there doing this kind of stuff, which is why it takes so damn long sometimes. So we're working on streamlining it some more. Oh my God, what is with me today?
Eat more scotch.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, good point.
If you really needed to take something out, you could get rid of that Batman impression I did.
Oh, if you were to explicitly request that, yeah, we would absolutely take out that. No, but no, it was fine, by the
I
way.
Wouldn't. No, I wouldn't do it.
Hey, I ended the last cast with one.
Oh, yeah, that was fun. I think I know what you're talking about.
Now, you pulled your Commissioner Gordon out. Just whipped it right out for everyone to see. He's the guy who says that line.
Oh, that was Gordon. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was Gordon.
What kind of scotch you drink it anyway, Eternal?
This is a 15-year Glenlivet.
Oh, I have some of that near me.
It is pretty damn good, isn't it?
It is. I have an Oban 15 that's waiting to be opened, so...
I've never had that, but I'm a very new to the world of drinking scotch. I know very little. I discovered Glenlivet, and I said, this is good scotch, so I'm just gonna, like, stick with it and maybe experiment sometime later, but we'll stick with one I know. I'm like that about my drinks in general. Like, I like to stick with... I like that with anything I use. I like to stick with one thing and just...
And listen to one radio station?
I am... No, seriously, I'm like that with restaurants, though. I'll go and get my one dish. Like, you know me. I go to Chipotle. You know what I'm going to order.
No, I do the same thing, okay? I'm just making fun of you.
Well, to be fair, my car has been set to the same radio station because I don't turn it on. Like, I never use the radio. So, it has been set to the same radio station for, like, 5 years or something. I don't know. Not that long, but, like, 3 years. Wait, what is this?
That is a post. I just linked it to the chat. I did not realize how high on the leaderboards Throw Ahoy maybe got on a Circle Jerk post. I'm kind of proud of him for proud of him for that.
Oh, I remember this post. I laughed hysterically at it.
Yeah, this was Throhoy, matey. That's good man. Catching me off guard here. TIL, Steve Jobs patented the cure for cancer, but he was so greedy that he didn't even use it on himself.
Oh, God.
I'm sure it was posted literally like the day he died.
8 months ago? Is that right?
8 months ago, yeah. You can no longer up downvote it, I found out.
I want to give him all my upvotes.
The first comment is, upon my demise, I want to donate all my money to me, Steve Jobs.
So, I think it's getting me about that time to shut down the server and...
I'm out of words to say.
You have words to say? Well, we can... I'm gonna cut the after show recording because we're hitting almost another hour on this, so... We can still say words, but no one else is going to hear them. Unless they're in Mumble.
Yeah. Good shit, guys. I do to Xlogica, thank you for fomenting a very proactive discussion if you're still hanging out. And always decline to state, y'all.
Hope y'all enjoyed the cast.
Good night. Scotch.